Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 32, Canto 4, Chapter 9. Matir Vidushita Devai. Patadbhir Asahishnubihi. Yonaradavachas Tatyam. Nagrahisham Asattamaha. Matir Vidushita Devai. Patadvir Asahishnubihi. Yonaradavachas Tatyam. Nagrahisham Asattamaha. Mati. Intelligence, vidushita, contaminated, devai, by the demigods, patadbihi, will fall down, asahishnubihi, intolerant, yaha, I who, Narada, of the great sage Narada, Vachaha of the instructions. Tatyam, the truth. Na, not. Agrahisham, could accept. Asat tamaha, the most wretched. Translation, since all the demigods who are situated in the higher planetary system will have to come down again. They are all envious of my being elevated to Vaikuntha Loka by devotional service. These intolerant demigods have dissipated my intelligence, and only for this reason could I not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of the sage Narada. Interesting. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As shown by many instances in the Vedic literature, when a person undergoes severe austerities, the demigods become very much perturbed because they are always afraid of losing their posts as the predominating deities of the heavenly planets. It is known to them that their position in the higher planetary system is impermanent, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter. Kshine punye marcha lokam vishanti. It is said in the Gita that after exhausting the results of their pious activities, all the demigods who are inhabitants of the higher planetary system have to come back again to this earth paragraph. It is a fact that the demigods control the different activities of the limbs of our bodies. Factually, we are not free even in moving our eyelids. Everything is controlled by them. Dhruva Maharaja's conclusion is that these demigods, being envious of his superior position in devotional service, conspired against him to pollute his intelligence. And thus, although he was a disciple, a great Vaishnav Narada Muni, he could not accept Narada's valid instructions. Now, Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he had neglected these instructions. Narada Muni had asked him, quote, "Why should you bother about insult or adoration from your stepmother?" Unquote. He, of course, said to Dhruva Maharaj that since Dhruva was only a child, what did he have to do with such insult or adoration? But Dhruva Maharaj was determined to achieve the benediction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore Narada advised him to go back home for the time being. And in mature time, he could try to practice devotional service. Dhruva Maharaj regretted that he rejected the advice of Narada Muni and was adamant in asking him for something perishable namely revenge against the stepmother for her insult and possession of the kingdom of his father. Paragraph. Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he could not take seriously the instruction of his spiritual master and that his consciousness was therefore contaminated. Still, the Lord is so merciful that due to Dhruva's execution of devotional service, he offered Dhruva the ultimate Vaishnava goal. But here, vidushita devai patadbir asahishnubihi ya yo naradavachas tatyam nagra hisham asatamaha. Since all the demigods, translation, since all the demigods who are situated in the higher planetary system will have to come down again, they are all envious of my being elevated to Vaikuntha Loka by devotional service. These intolerant demigods, asahishnubihi, means intolerant. These intolerant demigods have dissipated my intelligence, and only for this reason could I not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of the sage Narada. Sounds to me like something that we're advised not to do. He's the fault. He's to blame. They made me do it. Matir vidushita devai patadbir. So, for sure, deva patadbir, the devas are, they fall again, the residents of the heavenly planets. That's this reference to this ninth chapter, Bhagavad Gita, after residing in the heavenly planets for some time. Of course, unless they engage in further devotional service, the just being in the heavenly planets alone results in exhausting the piety and then falling again. So that's the reference from Bhagavad Gita, as Dhruva is saying. And then another is their asahishnubihi, being intolerant. They know that they have to come back again. They are intolerant, or in other words, envious of Dhruva Maharaj's not only attaining heaven, but surpassing them. Intolerant. So the inference is because they were intolerant, because they were wanting to be better than and being worried that Dhruva might want to take over their kingdom too, because he had said that he wanted not just the kingdom of earth, which was the kingdom of his father, but the kingdom of the universe, which was Swayambhuva Manu's kingdom, and beyond that the planet of Lord Brahma, Satyaloka. He wanted a kingdom better than that. And then there's also this, so that's child's talk. But look, it happened. So, chronologically, here's a little child off in the forest saying, I want a kingdom better than Lord Brahma. Now, are the demigods going to be concerned about a little child saying something like that? Dhruva's analysis is yes. And at that moment, conspiring against me, they bewildered and polluted my intelligence so that I would say no to Narada. Besides, so a Vaishnava doesn't do things like that commonly. So they're to blame for my problem. Hare Krishna. Good morning. Fault finding, saying that others are the cause of my misfortune is not the program of a Vaishnava. I'm responsible for my misfortune. That's the consciousness of a Vaishnava. Although there are circumstances where the demigods, particularly Indra is well known for this, where he's thinking that some very advanced personality is conspiring to take over his position, so he does something. He sends, his favorite program is he sends heavenly damsels to attract the mind of the yogi that's in meditation away from his meditation. In Ramayana, Sita describes to Ram one situation like that, only this time he didn't send a damsel. He came himself in disguise as a king. And a king who was traveling through the forest, there was one ascetic in the forest, and he was, really good ascetic. Just as is being said here, when a person undergoes severe austerities. So there was an ascetic in the forest doing his meditation. So Indra came in the guise of a king, a worldly king, carrying a sword, and went to the hermitage of the ascetic and asked for some service. And the ascetic said, sure, what is it that you would like? I'm traveling through the forest, carrying this sword is a burden, so can you please take care of it? I'll come back for it later. Sage said, sure, I'll do that service. And so Indra went away. So being very diligent and true to his word, the ascetic took care of the sword. Wherever he went, here and there, and fetching water and gathering roots and berries and whatever it was, his edibles, he took the sword with him. And just having that sword in his hand, again and again and again, his good quality became contaminated by viciousness, and he used the sword in a detrimental way, and all his merit was taken. Indra was successful. So Sita uses that as an example to Ram, saying, here we are in the forest. We're here at the indication of Dasarath, and you've just taken some vows to the sages that you will kill the Rakshasas in the forest. You'll destroy them all. And they haven't done anything to harm you and harm us. And one should use weapons only in those situations where there is harm. And otherwise, someone that's very powerful and has a weapon can easily misuse it. Just power goes to the head. So this is my concern. So in that, Ram says several things. He says, only someone that has such love as you can speak like this. Like we were talking last night about someone that's bringing some concern. And even if the concern, it seems to me that some wrong has been done or could easily be done, and so the perception of the person is not matching reality. So Ram appreciates, your love for me is so wonderful. Who could speak like this to me except you, because of your love for me? And then he said, I have never and will never act against the principles of Dharma. And the principle of Dharma is, although I'm in exile, I'm the son of Dasarath, and I'm the Kshatriya, of the son of the king. And it's my duty as a Kshatriya to give protection, and the Brahmanas have asked for protection. So it's Dharma, it's Dharmic. And yes, they haven't done anything to me, but a Kshatriya gives protection to others, even if it hasn't affected the king. So I will never use this sword or my arrows other than for a Dharmic principle. You have my solemn word. So Sita becomes pacified. But back to the Asahishnubihi. when there are those that the demigods, there are circumstances, there's many such descriptions where they get the heebie-jeebies. They think, oh, he's trying to take over. I may lose my position. It's politics. And so they do something political to try to, you know, divide and conquer or take away their power or do something, have them fall down or something. So he's citing that's true. While that's true, it's not the same, that the same strength of truth in therefore I couldn't accept what Narada said. As the living entity, Prabhupada refers to this phrase, man proposes, God disposes. So it was Narada's desire. It was his own stubborn tenacity to hold on to these asadbihi. If you remember from yesterday. Antavat. That which is perishable. The two things that are mentioned specifically in this purport and the previous purports, the perishable things he was attached to was the mentality of get back and revenge and something impermanent like a kingdom. His father's kingdom and better than his father's kingdom and kingdom, a worldly kingdom. It's antavat, perishable. So one who is determined to hold on to that which is perishable, Krishna doesn't interfere. What to speak of the demigods? You know, if by holding on to something perishable, then how is it that he was able to attain Vaikuntha? That's another apparent contradiction. It's explained in the previous verses that we discussed. Lord Vishnu took that away. He early had that motivation. Lord Vishnu took away the motivation, but at the same time then gave him the kingdom to rule in such a way he wasn't attached to ruling the kingdom. He was detached from ruling the kingdom, but ruled the kingdom because it was an instruction of Lord Vishnu for him to do so. That's nice. That's karma palatyaga. One performs their prescribed duties without attachment. Karma nivadikaraste mahapaleshu kadachana. Performing prescribed duties without attachment to the pala, or the fruit of the prescribed duty. Just in service. So he was given that opportunity. Although his regret, Dhruva was regretting that he had such a desire. And one more time. Matir vidushita. Matir is intelligence in this case. The state of mind or intelligence. Matir vidushita. Vidushita is contaminated, polluted. The translation that Prabhupada has given is that they dissipated my intelligence. They bewildered my intelligence. They splayed out my intelligence. So my focus on serving the personality of Godhead without any other motivation, it was their fault. They dissipated my intelligence. It was his fault. He was stubborn and tenaciously holding on to this material aspiration, kingdom aspiration, revenge aspiration. And so that was reciprocated with. But so one other part of this is, it's true that the demigods control things of this world. Now, I don't know of any other reference where it says they control our intelligence, because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks of he's supplying, situated from within the heart. Matir, sarva shachaham riddhi sannivishto, mataks matir gyanam apohanam cha. Krishna is situated within the heart. Riddhi is heart. Sarva shachaham riddhi sannivishto. He's situated within the heart. And from that position, Krishna is giving remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So Krishna is supplying spiritual intelligence, or Krishna is supplying material intelligence, according to the disposition or regard a living entity has for him. Exactly what the role of the demigods in, you know, this type or that type of material intelligence is another thing. Because there's an element, it's one of the 24 elements or eight principal elements of creation. And elements have controllers of those elements. But they do so under the direction or inclination of the personality of Godhead, which is, as far as intelligence goes, it's according to the disposition or the regard living entity has for Krishna. Yaitam mam prapadyante tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. As everyone, as they prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, or as they hold regard for me, I reciprocate. So Krishna doesn't, oh, I don't like you, I'll give you bad intelligence. Oh, I like you, I'll give you good intelligence. He's neutral. And the demigods are ministering according to Krishna's indication. Now, they also have some free will, and they also have some issues going on. Their less than pure situation is going on. And sometimes they step in and do, you know, they're checking a great sage program, trying to get them to fall down or get distracted or something. And that's what he's saying. That's the crutch that he's leaning on. But the flip side is when there's instruction that comes from Narada Muni or a representative of Narada Muni, that's the rope that can pull us out of the dark well of material existence. Prabhupada uses that metaphor. Someone has fallen in the bottom of a well. What are you going to do? You can't climb up the sides of the well. If someone happens to pass by and sees, hey, look down there, there's someone in the well, and they lower a rope, and you can hold on to the rope, and they'll pull you up by just hold on to the rope, then one can get out of the well. So, using that metaphor, Prabhupada describes the instructions of a qualified spiritual master as like the rope. There's the spiritual master, and there's the instructions of the spiritual master. One who holds on to the instructions of the spiritual master, like one's life and soul, that's by means of getting out of this dark well of material existence, one can be relieved. And his lamentation is, I didn't do that. I neglected the instructions. Just read the last part. The last part doesn't give the blame to the demigods, it gives the blame to Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj, this last paragraph. Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he could not take seriously the instruction of his spiritual master and that his consciousness was therefore contaminated. Not that the demigods are messing around. He's taking responsibility. Still, the Lord is so merciful that due to Dhruva's execution of devotional service, he offered Dhruva the ultimate Vaishnava goal. So even he didn't take the instruction, like the full force of the instruction. He did very seriously take the instruction of how to perform devotional service. While he didn't give up the wrong mentality for doing so, he very, very carefully carried out the instructions of Narada of how to render devotional service. And so he got the ultimate Vaishnava goal, which included becoming free from that motivation. At the end, he didn't have that motivation. Now later, there's another chapter that follows after the prayers of Dhruva and Lord Vishnu and everything, this chapter here, he goes back, he becomes the king, and then there's like a, he's the king, that his father has gone to the forest following the footsteps of his son, trying to achieve spiritual perfection in the same manner. And then later on, he's the king, and his stepbrother, the same one that was sitting on the lap of Uttanapada, and when Dhruva wanted to sit next to him on the other leg, the other part of his lap, and Saruchi pushed him off his father's lap, that same son or brother was Anupam. And Anupam was one day in the forest doing whatever kings do in the forest, hunting or something, and he was killed by the Yakshas. They're followers of Kuvera. And when Dhruva came to know that, he got his whole army together and went to his plan was to destroy their capital city. All Yakshas should be destroyed. And he was powerful enough to do it. And, you know, without all the details, when he went, they displayed mystic powers to defeat him because the Yakshas are mystics. And the Brahmanas, he became bewildered. The scene of these ghastly figures in the sky, the whole sky became dark as night. And then fire-breathing mystical entities appeared and throwing down huge boulders and mountaintops and trees, and he was bewildered. Could you imagine? And the ministers who were with him stood behind him and said, "Dhruva, remember Krishna. It said you'll not be defeated. And Lord Vishnu said you'll rule for 36,000 years. Remember he said that. So nothing's going to happen. You know, get it together. Stand up and fight. Be a hero." So with that, just took that word. And immediately he drew his bow with an arrow, and the whole mystic apparition disappeared. Poof. Gone. Wonderful scene. And then he fought and destroyed the Yakshas. And he was destroying the Yakshas so incredibly bad that Kuvera, the person who they serve, came and said, "You know, Dhruva, don't destroy the entire race of Yakshas. Some of them were responsible for the death of your brother, but not the whole bunch of them. So stop. You've avenged the death of your brother. Stop." And he stopped. Just like that. Point being, although Dhruva was pure enough to do what he did and to see the Supreme Lord and have the feelings that he's expressing now, there was still something there that he lost it again. He became overcome by anger. He was a Kshatriya. That's the point. He was a Kshatriya. That's like Arjuna was a Kshatriya. Although he was a pure devotee, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Arjuna, you don't have the adhikar to renounce work because you're a Kshatriya, you're a spirit. You're going to fight. You say, 'I will fight.' You're going to fight. You have a Kshatriya spirit. So you have to perform your prescribed duty." Or in Sri Brahma Samhita, even after Lord Brahma has these realizations of the personality of Godhead, Lord Govinda, and it's beautiful, beautiful prayers. When the prayers are over, he turns to Lord Vishnu and says, "I still have this desire to create a universe. What do I do? Because it's material. I have a material desire. How does someone have a material desire after all of that? The one answer is it's not a material desire, it's a desire in service to the Lord. But it started as a material desire. So when things that are, and that's how Lord Vishnu replies, stay in your sadhana. Not to say that he's in the stage of sadhana bhakti like we are. Perform your devotional practices and join these inclinations for activity. We'll call that swabhava because that's what Krishna calls it in Bhagavad Gita. Your inclination for activity. Combine it with practices of pure devotion and it will be as liberating as the practices of pure devotion. So, it's a little delicate. We don't want to go into the territory of putting on a pan scale or hooking up to a meter, you know, the purity meter. How pure is Dhruva Maharaj? How pure is Lord Brahma, the original preceptor of our sampradaya? You know, that's a little risky. But the indication from the Leela is there's some residual tendencies even in Dhruva Maharaj, even in Lord Brahma, that one can say, well, it's a Leela and the Lord is inspiring him in this way. But in the case, one might say that with Lord Brahma. But with Dhruva, he was, you know, he was a little kid. And then 6 months later, he's at this very elevated stage, saying all these heavy things about the demigods. And then later on, you know, getting angry and losing it. Destroying an entire civilization of yakshas. So, something is there. What's required is like the verse in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna speaks of Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Who knows the verse? Mam Chayovya Vicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevase Sagunan Samatityaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. When at once comes the level of Brahman. But that's describing a condition where one at once comes the level of Brahman. But supposing there's some relapse. You know, there's some slackening in that activity or that submission or something like that. Because we can, devotional service is performed from the platform of spirit. Yes? Yes. When we're engaged properly in devotional service, we're on that platform. But is it possible to slacken and become distracted from the standard of devotional service? Yes. So it can be intermittent like that. From the platform of Brahman to the platform of Maya. To the platform of Brahman and, you know, some vacillation back and forth. So the final paragraph is the one that we should pay attention to, especially if we don't hear the instructions, as Dhruva didn't hear the instructions because he chose to not hear the instructions of Narada, then we're subject to the material energy. And the converse is if we take shelter of the instructions of scripture and under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, we're protected from that situation. That's the rope that can pull us out of material existence. Any discussion or questions? Yes.
karma, it seems like I can see of blaming and revenge, taking revenge is so strong that Guru Maharaj couldn't escape from that.
Yeah, if he can do it, what about you?
For us? Yeah. That's the thing.
Well, learn from Dhruva. Oh, I really wish I hadn't had that mentality. Not just because it's not nice, or you know, a good person doesn't have that mentality, but there's consequences for that mentality. There's further implication in material existence by carrying that mentality. So like Dhruva, supposing, well, you know, I know it's not right. Like that's what he said to Narada. I know that your instructions are good, but I can't follow them. But I want devotional service. So then you go on with devotional service as Dhruva, but wishing that that wasn't there, and in Dhruva's case, it was taken away. It was taken away. When he came back, he treated his stepmother just like his mother. You know, I don't like you because you said this bad thing. It was gone. It was gone through the potency of devotional service. So our faith should go there. Even we may be weak, and that revengeful spirit or whatever it is, hurt when somebody says something nasty, that's material. The speaking that is nasty and in reacting is also material. They're both material. We become implicated in someone else's material consciousness if we react to it. But one can go beyond that through the medium of devotional service. So our faith should go to devotional service. Even if I'm weak, my faith should go to devotional service. Yes?
I just remembered one example, like Kumbhakarna and Ravana, they were performing severe austerity.
Yeah.
Ravana managed to get some the benediction, whatever he wanted, but then Kumbhakarna, the person that died for this, Saraswati went on, sat on the tongue and made him to ask a different benediction than originally he intended to. Like, I want to sleep for 6 months and be awake for 6 months. So, I just.
And he was, his we know when Ram came, he stood by Ravana's side, but he gave him the proper advice. And Ravana couldn't take it, and so he said, okay, I'll stick by your side, but you're foolish, and you're going to bring destruction to everything. But I'll stick by your side. Yes.
So I was just wondering, like, the Dhruva Maharaj's intention going to forest. Dhruva Maharaj's intention reacting to the incident, what happened when he was about to sit on his father's lap, and he was insulted.
Yeah.
So what he should have been done instead of this mentality, like, you know, what he should have been, his reaction. But anyway, he also wants to have that normal, you know, desire to, but he has to,
well,
he offered that. But
let's say two things. One is, he had his nature, Kshatriya spirited, chivalrous. Oh yeah. So he was chivalrous. So he was acting according to his nature. So that was fine, acting according to his nature. But then when he received the instruction from Narada, he should have followed the instruction of Narada. That's what he should have done. So going to the forest wasn't the problem. It's not following the instruction of Narada was the problem.
Because Narada instructed not to go.
What's that?
Narada instructed not to go to the forest right now.
Yeah, we just read it. Yes.
So what?
You can ask the same question again. His mistake was, what should he have done? He should have followed the instructions of Narada.
Yeah.
That's what he should have done.
So, I mean, I'm trying to. So, in case he should have been quiet and we carry on his normal, be like a child, and then whenever he grows up,
Whether it's a child, whatever, he gave several things. One of them was do it later. But another instruction was just give up this mentality. And he couldn't do it. So what should he have done? He should have given up the mentality. And it doesn't mean, you know, 0 to 100 in a fraction of a second. Means, you know, could mean by cultivation give up that mentality. But he should have followed, but he didn't want to let go of that mentality. So what he should have done was follow the instructions that he received. Yes?
The thing is that you shouldn't go try to obey the Gandhi or go to the force. You're supposed to at least go talk to somebody.
Go talk to somebody, yeah. Yeah, exactly. This history is from a different age. It's Satyayuga, where the process for achieving spiritual perfection was meditation. And meditation is done in a secluded place. So it was fine that different personalities following that path of perfection for Satyayuga, they went to a secluded place. The instruction that you repeated is, for this age, that's not recommended. We don't have the qualification to do what they did in Satyayuga. I mean, read what Narada did, and you know, who has the qualification to do that? The answer is nobody. So we shouldn't imitate what we're not qualified to do. And even more specifically, there are practices that for this age are recommended. We should take shelter of those. That's the message. Something else? Yes?
No, this just seems like a gleaming example of the benefit of staying determined in your connection with Guru, because Guru is taking on when you slack off or when you have a setback. It seems like the mechanic of, you know, Guru's then. I mean, he's carrying you all the time, but he has to carry you even more then. But if your connection is strong, then you feel it more quickly and can start working upon it so that then you can get back to the rectification point.
Well, that's this. Dhruva Maharaj, yes. At the same time, or on the other hand, Dhruva Maharaja's position is in it a very unique mix, where he felt very strongly connected to Narada. Even he was saying no to his instruction, because what Narada had done was give him the means to reach Vishnu. And he wouldn't have been able to do that without Narada's not only instructing him how to do it, but with Narada's mercy. So he was extremely grateful. That was exhibited from the very moment that Narada gave him the instruction, go to Mahavan, here's the mantra, here's how you do your austerities, here's how you do the process of meditation. And before they parted, his heart was filled with incredible appreciation for the mercy he just received. And that carried him to the stage that he achieved. Say it conversely, without that in his heart, he wouldn't have been able to achieve what he achieved. Because one can't achieve what he achieved without mercy. And recognizing, valuing, using your language, being carried by that mercy. He went from, you know, completely childish to completely pure through that mercy. Someone else, do you have something?
Kshatriya's Shiv spirit is primarily pushed by the mode of passion.
Mm-hmm.
And And we see the example of Dhruva and many other kings who are pure devotees, yet they take on the role of administrator of Kshatriya.
Arjuna.
Arjuna as well. Experiences that when with devotional service, the modes of nature become elevated. So it seems like the tendency for that activity reduces?
Depends. The system is created by Krishna. He says, Chaturvarnamaya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. He creates it. So he has Arjuna being a Kshatriya. You know, it's not an indication of Arjuna's weakness as a devotee that he's a Kshatriya. He hasn't come to a Brahmana stage yet. It's a position that Krishna has created and Arjuna is filling it. And now do that for me.
Motivation is pure.
Yes, that's exactly the point. That's the purity. The mode was acting, but without selfishness or proprietorship or controllership or doership. Mm. When the doership came in by Krishna's arrangement, then he got bewildered. His strength was taken. So, regardless of our nature, so that's like a little bit Suja's question: What should Dhruva have done? He was acting according to his nature. There's nothing wrong with acting according to your nature, provided it's under the codes of Dharma. So, Arjuna's bewilderment was: what's my Dharma? What's my duty? Krishna says your duty is to fight. I like the duty that says I go off the battlefield and go do someone else's duty. And Krishna says, no, even if you can do someone else's duty perfectly, you do your duty, even if there's flaw in it. But do your duty that's according to your nature. So that's what we should do. We should know what our nature is, or by guidance and direction from others, know what our nature is. And without motivation, karma niva nikaraste mapaleshu kadachana, perform your prescribed duty without attachment to the fruits of the duty. Do it for Krishna. And that's karma yoga. That's not shuddha bhakti. But so then carry on shuddha bhakti position. He went back and became the king. I mean, when he grew up, became the king and ruled with detachment, but his consciousness was Vaikuntha consciousness, and that was his attainment. Yes.
I had this question for a long time. The women also have this affordability.
Yes. Yes, of course. That's a very active discussion these days in ISKCON, isn't it? Sri Dharma. It's in relation to, I don't want to go into this topic, but it's in relation to female Diksha Gurus. In relation to female Diksha Gurus, there's a group of very scripturally grounded persons who say, because of Sri Dharma, unless one is on this very, very elevated position of, like, you know, Janava and some, you know, a liberated soul, an Uttama Adhikari personality, the Swabhava duties, the duties of worldly position should be honored. They must be. And catch this one. Because it's, while a male may also not be a liberated soul, an Uttama Adhikari position, their dharma is different. And so, even less than an Uttama Adhikari personality, they may become a Diksha Guru, but women are not to become Diksha Gurus. That's the philosophical position that's being taken by a number of devotees. They don't have an objection to female Diksha Gurus, provided that very, very special, and minus that very, very special, then one has to perform duty according to the codes of Dharma. And what do the codes of Dharma say? You know, and that's their position. And then there's other people that have other positions. But, you know, so let's say Draupadi. Not only she was following Sri Dharma, she was a princess. She was powerful, you know, Jayadrath, take this, and knocked him out. And then the Pandavas are back in the palace, and she was, you know, the temple commander, the palace commander. She walked around with her lists of, you know, taking care of everything while they were, you know, doing other duties. That was her nature. Not all queens have that nature, but she had that nature. So when Dharma indicates that we have a psychophysical nature, guna and karma nature, and we are to act according to our nature, under the codes of theistic conduct, under the guidance of a qualified spiritual master. That's in our, you know, transitions phase while we're chanting the holy name. So that's the transcendental elevator. But before we get to the top floor, we need to perform our prescribed duties according to our nature. Side by side. And our initiation process is a little detailed. Our initiation process follows the same standard or principle. We have a Pancharatrika system with first initiation that has nothing to do with anything to do with the body other than you have one and you use the tongue to chant and the ear to hear. And you follow four regular principles. That's a Pancharatrika system. And the Gayatri initiation, Brahminical initiation, is a Vaidika system. Those are Vedic mantras through which one may then worship the deity and do other Brahminical duties, perform fire sacrifices, yajñas, that are not to be done by anyone other than a Brahmana. So that it's a... Gopi Pranadana gave a brilliant lecture. I don't understand all the technicalities that he spoke about, but Bhaktisiddhanta did the same, a blend of the Pancharatrika system, that's a Vaishnav system, that's regardless of birth and any other, you know, regardless of any qualification, like our Achmana mantra, Om Apavitra Pavitro Va Sarvavastam Gatopiha, you know, whatever it is, from this end to that end and everything in between, Yasmaret Pundarikaksham. Just remember the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead. Sabhaya abhyantara suchihi. One becomes suchi. That's the Pancharatrika system, a Vaishnav ritual. And then there's a Vedic ritual. And Bhaktisiddhanta and following him, Srila Prabhupada, and following him, us, we combine their two. Very interesting. Deep subject, and I'm going to end there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.